So I graduated from college in 1999. And when I went to college, coming from a family of tradesmen. And it was a point of real pride that I was the first male that had ever graduated from college on my father's side. So there was a mentality that a trades job was a job to work for a large corporation that made you very susceptible to global pressures that you had no control over, that it was a difficult way to earn a living, and it was a poor way to earn a living. And so you wanted to go white collar, and there's all this type of the knowledge economy and all those things. The problem was, as I quickly discovered, was that, you know, that might be true. There was also a lot of soulless cubicle farms on the other side that made you wonder if making enough money really mattered, right?
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And today we are talking about jobs together. This is a conversation where we are talking about how to approach what you can potentially get into as far as your career in a little bit of a non-traditional way. You know, we talk a lot about some of the adverse impacts that traditional higher education is having here at Unbound. But I think here we dig into a lot of the potential benefits that you can have from not just going for a non-traditional higher education, but going for something completely different entirely.
Well, David, I spent an interesting past couple of weeks. I've been talking to a bunch of local business leaders here where we live in the middle of the Shenandoah Valley. And the topic is one that has become extremely popular recently. I've lost track of the amount of times I've had this conversation. It's at least a weekly, frequently it's a daily conversation for me. And it all has to do with a bunch of companies that I characterize as some of the largest, most successful companies in our area. And they have one thing and one thing only in their mind. And that is, we could be a lot larger if we had people to work for us. And One of the distinguishing characteristics of all these companies is that they are looking for tradesmen. They're looking for people that have some ability to do a trade in a variety of different places. And so it ranges from truck drivers to electricians, plumbers, contractors, builders, sheet metal and welders, fabricators, all, you know, across the board, almost anything that you can think of that happens to be in the trades. I spoke last night to a gentleman. This is really interesting, David. I spoke last night to a gentleman who does refrigeration, not HVAC, refrigeration. And he said, new refrigeration guys are just pipe swappers. And the business owner I was talking to said, this guy comes in and he has kept some of my stuff running for years. And he said, most people come in and say, oh, your cooler broke, you can get it going again. He says, I've got stores that I'm working on that have deli coolers from the 1950s. And, you know, I service them once every 15 years. But what was interesting was this gentleman is going to retire in December. And it's causing a ripple panic effect through most of the local businesses that require refrigeration, because they have no idea who's going to replace him, because there isn't anybody to replace him. Now, we're talking about somebody who's making solid six figures, or could make solid six figures, and a business that could be grown tremendously more than that, especially if there's more than one person. But he's been limited by his own capacity for years because he can't train anybody to be able to do the troubleshooting and work that he does. So all that to say, David, is that there's this fascinating situation where, you know, I think we've talked before, unemployment rates are higher now among college graduates than they are among high school graduates. And part of that is just an explosion in blue-collar trades jobs in a way that's become quite revolutionary.
It's such a fascinating change in the landscape for young people in what has just been the conventional wisdom for the last 20 or so years versus the reality now that is almost a pendulum swing between how the default now is go to college and get a degree and then get a job in whatever field that you're going to get your degree in. Maybe the reality of that is not really true anymore. And, you know, go and get a job in the trades because there is a ton of jobs there and you're going to be able to make a really good living in one of the trades fields. And so you actually found and was just showing me a really interesting video that talked about this very subject. Can you give us a little bit of background on what that was saying?
Yeah, well, even before I give you, so I do want to talk about that video, but before we do that, I wonder if it's helpful for listeners if we can just lay a bit of a landscape, trading on a little bit of our own experience, but also our research, and then on my side, these conversations I've had almost continuously for the last 3 years. So that's when it's just really exploded. And I think obviously there's a COVID after effect there that's driving some of this. Okay, so let's build the landscape here. So I graduated from college in 1999. And when I went to college, coming from a family of tradesmen. And it was a point of real pride that I was the first male that had ever graduated from college on my father's side. And, well, actually, on my mother's side as well. My mother graduated with a bachelor's degree, so first person, but I was the first male on both sides, first person on my father's side. And so in the whole line, and that was a point of a good amount of pride for my family. I didn't care so much about it because I wasn't really entirely sure what I was supposed to do with my stupid degree. But they thought it was a big deal. And the entire system was sort of set up that, like, you know, if you're a tradesperson, you're going to have to work for a big company. You're going to be subject to the company's problems. And the jobs are drying up because globalization means that, you know that they can go out of business at any time. They get offshored. The plant goes out of town, all those kinds of things, right? So there was a mentality that a trades job was a job to work for a large corporation that made you very susceptible to global pressures that you had no control over, that it was a difficult way to earn a living, and it was a poor way to earn a living. And so you wanted to go white collar, and there's all this talk about the knowledge economy and all those things. The problem was, as I quickly discovered, was that, you know, that might be true. There was also a lot of soulless cubicle farms on the other side that made you wonder if making enough money really mattered, right? And so there was that going on. But what happened even more so was that we have an arms race going on in college. So two really odd factors happened to higher education. One was the unbelievable amount of government money that was being pumped into the system that completely distorted the value proposition, right? When you have free, quote unquote, government money getting chucked into a system, it completely distorts anybody's ability to figure out how much is valuable. And so you see this crazy inflation in colleges. And I tell everybody all the time, most colleges raise their prices about the amount that the government raises the Stafford loan from freshman to sophomore to junior to senior year, which means your out-of-pocket cost stays the same the 4 years in college, but you borrow more, subsidized and backed up by the government, and that means that there's just a constant, unending drive of funds going into, I mean, price increases going into college. Okay, So that's happening. At the same time, U.S. News & World Report decides to sell a lot of magazines, but coming up with a mostly arbitrary way to gauge colleges. And part of that way to gauge college, you know, there's lots of colleges out there. How do you gauge quality of colleges as the prices are going up? Well, there's a lot of emphasis now on class ranking and GPAs and how many students from the high school go to college and SAT scores and all those kinds of things, which means is that presses down through the system. Guidance officers find, especially in private schools, but in public schools as well, that parents are evaluating their school system on the amount of students they get into four-year institutions. So high schools are bragging about, you know, we have a 98% graduation rate to four-year universities, four-year colleges. So keep this in mind. Anybody who goes to anything other than a bachelor's degree, so it goes to community college, goes to a trade school, goes into work to do any of those kinds of things, that's a hit on the school's prestige and on the guidance officer's professional chops and long-term prospects. And so there's this incredible incentive structure created accidentally to basically pick everybody and push them into college. And, you know, and there's good intentions behind this. I mean, people thinking this is the best thing for students. Well, The result was a tremendous amount of people that got pushed into higher education that didn't need higher education, who wound up with a tremendous amount of debt and not good job prospects at the end. But it also created a glut of college graduates in a market that didn't need that many college graduates. Mm-hmm. COVID comes along. You got a reshoring thing going on. You got a bit of an end of globalization happening. All of a sudden, you have the baby boomers retiring. And all of a sudden, things have not a little bit rapidly and almost catastrophically shifted the other direction. You have an employment rate among college graduates higher than you have high school graduates. You have businesses desperate for workers. But, and this is where our video comes in, David, there's another element here, which is what we have, and I see when I talk to parents and students, is we have this lingering idea that to be a blue-collar worker means low pay and susceptibility to a bigger system, like, you know, that you have to go to work for the plant, or you have to, and that plant may shut down. And what the reality is that from my perspective, the fastest way to a $100,000 career is to get good at a trade. And the fastest way to being your own boss and owning your own business is also through a trade. But the second part takes a little bit of a different kind of education. And then one final note before we get to the video, and that is, so an entire set of generations has been trained to think that post-high school, you must get training to put you into your job. And so what happens is that whole crowd that's like, okay, we're all going to go to college, they've changed their minds and said, well, sure, I'm going to go to college. And now they're all looking to go to trade school. And I just want to pause and say, if you want to go work for the plant, go to the trade school. That may or may not be a good thing to do, right? But I just had this happen, David. I was at a local coffee shop that we actually own an operation. So I was listening to some people talk. And the girl that was there was talking about her friends who wanted to come work there. And she said, you know, they've got all these certifications that they got through school. And I'm only half listening. And then she said, yeah, right now their classes are. And the class was like craft beer, you know, how to tell quality wine. And I was like, and she's wearing a shirt from the local state school. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I realized that her friends are all paying, David, get this, they're paying close to $100,000 to go to a state university to get a hospitality management degree. And I'm sitting there going, I'm paying people to learn some of those things, right? I mean, like, in other words, there's 10 places where I have businesses in our area that are would kill to have people come work for them. They would be delighted to train all of that stuff on real customers with real products. And they would pay the person doing it. And sometimes they'd pay them better than, you know, starting wages. And yet we have these people going to school for hospitality management when literally they're sitting in a business and within 15 square miles, there's 20 other businesses that would pay to teach the same thing. And I just want to tell our audience carefully here that when we're talking about the kind of trades gap that we're seeing, there are a few places where you need to get some instruction. That instruction will almost always be paid for by a company. And those companies are not just interested in paying you to learn those skills. They're desperate to pay you to learn those skills. Okay. Now, David, since I just hogged the mic for a while, why don't you tell everybody what this video is about? Because it combines some things we talk about a lot. This and...
So I think just to kind of recap and I think draw in a little bit of the concepts of what was talked about in the video that Jonathan found is essentially this phenomenon of how it used to be, especially in, you know, probably about 100 or so years ago, that the majority of American workers would go into some sort of trades work. And trades were very well respected. And college was seen as a very elite, something that was for a very select few. And it was not something that was very common. It was well respected, but not that many people went to it. It was not assumed that you were going to go to college. It was a much more common assumption that you were going to go into some sort of trades field. But for all the reasons that Jonathan just laid out, now we have essentially seen so much of, wait, if college is the elite thing, that's what everybody should do. Everybody should be able to get to be elite. And so now there is just, there's all these incentive structures that you just talked about that are trying to funnel as many people as possible into college and the jobs that college is well suited to train people for. And now, given compared to 1925 versus 2025, yes, there are definitely significantly more jobs that college prepares you better for than a trade will prepare you better for. But that doesn't mean that all of the other trades-related jobs are gone. There is still a significant amount of need for people who are trained in those jobs. And so I don't know what the exact percentages are, but let's just say 100 years ago, it was 20% went to college, 80% were in some sort of trades field or something like that. And now that ratio has almost flipped, but the actual demand for the jobs that are needed has not flipped nearly that dramatically. And so now we're in a situation where it's basic economics, where you have the demand has gone up dramatically for trades workers because people are not actually getting the education and going and getting the doing the work to get into some of these trades. And so the prices, what they can actually earn in those trades, is also going up because the amount of supply for them has gone down so much because so much of our culture, it is becoming ingrained in our culture because of these incentive structures that our schools have put in place to college is the thing to do. And so now, again, so low supply, high demand, that means that now the potential for earnings in the trades is significantly higher.
And we say significantly higher, higher than typical college graduates. More than that, there's some security in that. And I noticed this years ago, you know, when we had, at the time, there was a lot of offshoring of services that had been these white collar cubicle farm type jobs. And then it was discovered that when you had the internet connection, that you could have people in, say, India or in Asia do those same kind of service type jobs that were white collar, but were knowledge information-based type stuff. Well, now with an internet connection, it was easier and cheaper to offshore those. And so you found a lot of college graduates find themselves laid off. Meanwhile, if you needed the air conditioning fixed in your building, China was of very little help, and neither was India, right? In other words, you needed a guy there to do that. And so there was this service aspect of it that was important. Well, now you see that intensified. AI can do a lot of these jobs. And so, and yet, you know, AI can do a lot of things. But when you need the brakes repaired in your car, you need the brakes repaired in your car. And so far, there's not a robot to do that. That might be coming, but it's still at least over the horizon far enough that you don't have to worry about it if you're preparing for a job right now. But even if you do worry about that, this is where we'll have to kind of rein ourselves in a little bit, but I get pretty excited. And this is where I want those of you listening to think really differently about some of the stuff I'm saying here. So premise one, if you're looking to be employable and you're looking to get a better starting salary than most people, you should seriously consider the trades. Should you eschew everything else that you want to do and only go to the trades? No, you should think about this in terms of your skills and your interests and motivations and all those kinds of things. But it is undeniable that right now, if you would get on the course to get some experience and then get paid to put in the hours and get the certifications to become, say, a master electrician or a master plumber or get your class A contractor's license or learn how to weld or whatever, like you have a master HVAC technician, like you can put all those things in, then, you know, for the foreseeable future, you've got solid job opportunities in all those places, doesn't matter what part of the country you're living in, and they're probably paying at the upper end of middle class salaries. And that's fantastic. And so you should consider that. You should think that. And I would say that that is, in terms of a sure bet, nothing in life's a sure bet, in terms of a wise set of time use and things of that nature, that is more likely to result in economic satisfaction and economic success than a college degree in almost every case. Not every case, almost every case. There's lots of exceptions, and I'm not saying you should never go to college. I'm just saying there's opportunity here like never before for the reasons David just said. There's a second level here. The people listening to this podcast are often second-level people. The people that we have in Unbound are second-level students. And so second level is something a bit different. And that is, if you're just a little bit entrepreneurial, if you're independent, and a lot of people are homeschoolers listening to this podcast, and you've already been screwed up to live a normal life, right? Like, you've already got a whole different idea of how your schedule should go and how much control you have over it and what your priorities are and all those kinds of things. And you want to continue that professionally. Let me just tell you right now, you're not going to get that by going to college and going to work for a big company. You're also not going to do that by going to work for a big company as an electrician or a contractor or a builder or welder or whatever. Here's where you get that. You get that by rethinking the process that you're going to get to train for skills. And that rethinking involves this. You want to go into the trades. You want to get solid training, solid experience, solid skills in a particular field that interests you. And when I say solid, I would say 4 to 6 years. So it doesn't matter where you get this. Get somebody else to pay for this, but get into a situation where you get to figure out which way you'd like to get your hands dirty, and you put 4 to 6 years in learning how to do that. That's going to be hard. It's going to be dirty. It's going to be sweaty. It's going to pay pretty solid, but it's not necessarily what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. And then while you're doing that, this is the hard part. So you're going to be working 40 hours plus a week doing that, right? Maybe you do less than that, and that's fantastic, whatever. You're going to still go to school. What are you going to go to school on? I don't mean you're going to go to college. You're going to go to school and learning three things. Thing number one is you need to learn how to deal with people. Thing number two is you have to learn how to run a business. David and I were talking before we started the recording, speaking of some other businesses we operate and run, talk about, and I was saying just the basics of figuring out where the daggone money is going and leaving and coming in has been way harder than I thought in this particular business that we're running. And those are just basic business skills, and they apply doesn't matter what the business is, right? And skill number three is you want to become an expert as fast as possible on how to use AI. Now, hold that thought. I want you to introduce you to this principle that I call hybridization. Now, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but I do come from the country, so brace yourself, right? If you come from the country, especially if you come from the country with a bunch of people that are older than usual or do things the old ways, there's still horses involved in some level. And when I grew up, I still worked with people that used to farm exclusively with horses, and I did a lot of horse riding and horseback riding, stuff like that. A horse is really great. A donkey is really great, and they have the things that they do. But when you cross a horse and donkey, you get a mule. And a mule is better at almost everything than both a horse and a donkey, except for good looks. They look stupid, but they're almost always way more intelligent than a horse, way stronger than a horse, way more endurance than a horse, way more, like, there's a hybridization there that makes that animal better at the things that they do. Now, they have some other problems, and we're not going to get too much into the weeds on the veterinary science here, right? Okay, but the point is that this principle of hybridization is really strong. And so I have been telling students for years, I tell my own children this, I've observed this for years. I was actually just talking to a young man recently, and he was a pilot. And then he was doing some instructor flying. Now, if you're a pilot, that's often the best way to get hours. But I asked him if he liked teaching. He said yes. And I said, you should pay attention to that, because there's a lot of pilots and there's a lot of teachers, but there's less pilots who are great teachers. Mm-hmm. And when you're hiring a pilot, you want somebody that can fly your airframe. But if you can hire somebody that can fly your airframe and teach other people to fly the airframe safely behind you, and you're really good at that, that's a way better hire for you. That means you might get the job. It may mean you get paid more. It may mean that you may not have to fly as much eventually when you have a family and you don't have to bounce around. Like, in other words, it's that hybridization that makes things so powerful, right? So I'm suggesting to you there's a hybridization opportunity here, that if you have decent skills in a trade, above average skills in dealing with people, basic business skills, and above average AI skills, you put those things together, and what comes out the other end is you writing your check and doing almost any, whatever you want. And the sky is almost the sky is the limit here in terms of how far you will take that. Whatever it is that you're doing really has to do with your energy and your imagination. And that's the major change in this video that we're talking about. It was basically saying, if you can learn training combined with AI, the world's your oyster. And I'm saying, if you have a trade and combine it with AI plus business ability, plus the ability to deal with people, the world is filet mignon, which is way more interesting than being, well, being my oyster as far as I'm concerned.
We know it's tough to find the right resources for your high schooler. That's where Equip by Unbound comes in. This program for 9th through 11th graders combines Christian worldview training, coaching, and hands-on projects that help students apply what they're learning in real life. By year's end, they'll have stronger skills, clearer direction, and more confidence for what's ahead. Prices are going up soon, so now's the time. Learn more at beunbound.us/equip. Well, and really, I think like the AI piece is extremely valuable and I think is worth paying attention to. But honestly, Jonathan, I don't even think that it has to be that complex of part of the time. Because I think at this point, like, it's enough, especially if you have a little bit of that entrepreneurial spirit, to stand out in some of the, even the more basic things. I actually have a real life example of this. One of my friends who's back in Missouri, who is actually an Unbound alumni, we think we should definitely have him on the podcast at some point. While he was getting his degree in business, he was just mowing lawns on the side. And he just had that as a side lawn care business, fairly easy, straightforward thing to do to earn money. And he realized that a lot of people actually started recommending him and they were switching to his service over the services of some of the other bigger, more premier lawn and landscape service companies that were in his area. And so he realized that and he was pretty amazed and he was going and looking at his work going, I think I'm doing a fairly decent job, but I don't have nearly as good of equipment. I'm not quite as fast as they are, but... why are you guys switching to me? And the answer that he was getting was that just you show up on time, you show up exactly when you say that you are going to show up, or if not, you communicate that well, and you're extremely pleasant to work with. I don't feel like I'm getting the runaround or feel like I'm going to get inconsistent service when I call you to come and mow my lawn. And then he got a lot of business with that, and he started scaling it more and more. And essentially, once he graduated with his degree, he decided I can take this full time. And now at this point, it's a multi-million dollar company in sales at this point, and he has a fleet of guys. Anytime I visit my hometown at this point, pretty much every single time I'm driving around, I will see one of their trucks doing some sort of lawn or landscape or potentially snow removal business. At this point, just because it is a very known and trusted brand, and he's trained all of his people to just show up exactly when the people are expecting you to, or to just be reliable, be honest, be upfront, because just in that particular area, most of the big players didn't have that. And that was one of the things that people were looking for. And so I think that even if you don't necessarily have as much comfortability with AI tools, although I think at this point, like, that's something that gives you a really big edge, even just relatively simple things like we've talked about on previous episodes of this podcast, where if you can show up consistently, if you have an attitude of learning, if you are willing to own up to your mistakes and be trustworthy and be honest, a lot of these things can end up making you stand out a huge amount, not only as an employee, but potentially just as a business owner in some of these fields.
Well, that's exactly true, David. And I want people to kind of grasp the potential here, because so often we run into people who say, I want to be an entrepreneur. And it's that age old thing. Well, tell me when you say entrepreneur, what do you mean, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when people say entrepreneur, they often mean a lot of money. They mean a lot of energy. They mean a lot of risk. And so, I know I was
visionary, eyes in the cloud
visionary type stuff. And I was turned off for years from the whole entrepreneur idea, because it was like, okay, to be an entrepreneur, I was reading stories of these guys who were, coding these websites and then sleeping under their desk, curled around the CPU for warmth, trying to scale a company, trying to outpace the debtors, like millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars.
The Mark Zuckerbergs living in their garage building Facebook.
And so there's all these kinds of ideas. And look, there's nothing, I'm not disparaging that kind of entrepreneurship. And I'm glad that it exists and it creates these big, huge companies. And if that's you, fantastic. And you don't really need the advice from this podcast. For most people, it's not. But there's something that there's something much bigger and more important here. When we say entrepreneurship, we're not talking about that kind of risk. I just want you to, picture with me for a second. Whatever town that you're living in, I don't care where you are. If you're listening to this podcast and assuming you're in North America, and maybe this is true in other parts of the world as well, but North America is kind of what we know, right? There are people in your area whose cars break down. And most people, especially now, have less and less understanding of how their cars work. And most people really resent taking their car to a mechanic because they're not really sure if the mechanic is fixing their car, scamming them, selling them something they don't need, if they know what to do. Like there's a knowledge gap that makes them misunderstand what exactly is going on there. Well, what I'm saying is, if you would like to put 4 years in or 5 years in learning how to repair cars, then you could cover 80% of the car repairs that happen out there, and 20% of those repairs will probably bring in 80% of your income. That's probably changing brakes and, fixing just the kind of things that go wrong all the time, swapping spark plugs and those kinds of things. All right. So when you open the shop, there are people that are interested. If you open the shop and then you follow what David just said, and you say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, you're polite, you wear gloves, and so when you shake somebody's hands, you don't leave grease stains behind, you have normal hours, you've got a clean front end of your office, maybe you have a decent couch where people can sit while they're waiting, you have somebody that can answer the phone or, it gets back to them, you give a clear, transparent explanation of what's going on, and you build up a quick reputation for honesty, and you do a couple refunds when you're wrong. I mean, these are just really basic customer service stuff that most car mechanics don't do. I'm telling you that in any place that I know of that you can hear this podcast, you're immediately going to shoot to the top of the kind of places in the area. Okay, well, that's great. So now you can take care of your family, right? Well, I bet you can leverage that up that you can probably start to hire some guys who are going to be working on the shop. So you're not turning wrenches for more than 5 or 6 years after you start. So 4 years apprenticing, 5 years maybe establishing a business, 9 years in, you're probably not in the shop floor anymore unless you want to be. But now here's where things get really exciting, right? Well, maybe you do know something about AI. Well, now maybe AI starts to answer your phone or schedules people or builds you a website. How many car mechanics do you know that have a website that people trust, right? Or help you to figure out how to optimize Facebook ads or help you figure out and analyze all the tickets you did over the last 10 years and tell you the kind of services that make the most money. And so you franchise and you open up 2 or 3 shops downtown that only do those services because you know that's the services that people want the most, right? And they do those kinds of things. Well, now, what if you go a little bit deeper and you're like, there's this one vehicle that lots of people really love. So almost anywhere in the country, people are ridiculously stupid about Toyotas, right? And so, and you got a better idea having worked on a bunch of these on how to fabricate a 4Runner bumper. Okay, well, I'm just telling you, there are people all over the daggone country who will pay stupid amounts of money for anything that you can bolt onto a Toyota. And so now, maybe you've got it in the back shop. You have a couple guys that start fabricating bumpers, and then you start selling them online. And all of a sudden, your bumper sales are absolutely more than your sales on the front end. Or maybe it's something different. Maybe you work on a lot of Toyotas, and you start to work with AI to build an information system that tells people how to do the 4 most common jobs and repairs that you do on 4Runners, the 4 most common repairs you do on Tacomas. The point is, those things can scale farther than most people can dream. And those things can be wildly successful businesses. And they can make you a lot of money, maybe as much as you made in that really risky entrepreneur thing, but it's not a risky entrepreneur thing. It's a sweat equity thing. It's not easy. It's not easy money. It's not magic money. It's going to require hard work And it's going to require taking some uncomfortable steps. And it's going to require learning a bunch of things. And it's going to require doing things differently than everybody else. But it's something that can be done step by step in an easy way. It with easy being, it's not like only 1% of people can understand it. This is a proven roadmap. And you can take that idea and you can swap it into any trade you can think of. And you can build the same kind of on-ramp. And then the thing that I get excited about is that, sure, Zuckerberg starts Facebook, destroys the world in terms of everybody's social media stuff, employs a bunch of people that all have to examine their conscience that they're making their money off of driving social media that may or may not be killing all of us, right? I mean, I don't know where that all falls out, but I just know that if one of my kids told me they were working for Facebook, I'd wonder how I failed as a parent, just to be perfectly blunt, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about something else, right? You could start a business in your community that employs 20, 30, 40, 50 people in solid, honest labor that pays better than middle-class salaries, that allows young families to buy a house and to raise a family, that is an integral part of the community, that allows you to give back and tithe some of your business and, you know, fix some people's cars that need fixed for free. And in other words, this is just not just an entrepreneurship opportunity. This is a community-building, church-enhancing, neighbor-serving type of opportunity, because by definition, the trades are things that people need. Everybody needs their pipes fixed when they burst. Everybody needs some electrical work done. Everybody needs a drywall repaired. Everybody needs a new porch built on or the room fixed. Everybody needs their car repaired. That's the kind of opportunities that are sitting there. And it's an exciting time, David, to kind of think about this from a different perspective, but it's going to require thinking about what you do post high school in a different way.
Yeah. And really, I think it's just a beautiful example of ultimately like what capitalism should be and the beauty of it. You know, I think there are a lot of very fair critiques of what it looks like at the Facebook gigantic corporation level. But really, like all that it is, especially at this level, is just you look at the needs of the people around you in your community. You look at the needs of the people that you are already in community with, and you say, like, okay, I could potentially do work that meets these needs, and I could do it in a way that does it better than they are currently being met. And what are some ways that I can meet some other needs that maybe people aren't necessarily thinking about? And this is the way that you can look at your work as service. And that's something that we run into all the time with young people who are looking at what to do out of high school, is I want to do something that makes a difference, that actually like serves people and makes their lives better. Jonathan's example of a mechanic shop that does that is something that can actually really be a blessing to people, especially if you are someone who has just had like a really bad car accident and is looking for somebody reliable to get their work done or to get something assessed, and is just wanting a good, reliable place that you know is going to be honest, and you know they're not going to, you know, immediately, you know, jump down your throat, or they're going to try to take advantage of you. They're just going to be upfront and honest about what it's going to take to fix it. Then, man, that's a service. And especially if you can bring about a culture in that workplace where the people are trained to treat everybody who like they are made in the image of God. Absolute game changer, and something that can genuinely make a huge real world difference in the people around you. It doesn't necessarily have to look like going out and creating a new software product that changes the world. It might for some of you, and that's great. But it doesn't have to be. It can be something as simple as starting a lawn care or a mechanic business in your local community to make a difference that actually transforms lives.
Well, I guess we'll just end with this. And that is, who do you want to be? Do you want to be like everybody else? And by everybody else, I mean, you want to be struggling to buy a home, having to have a two-income family, working for somebody else, possibly in a cubicle farm or online. And look, I'm not trying to disparage any work, and I'm not trying to put anybody down here. And I'm not even saying that there's a problem with being like everybody else. You know, there's a lot of people that live fulfilling, rich, important lives. And you know, we talk about being extraordinary at ordinary things, and there's an opportunity to be extraordinary in those things. And so that's fine. And so it's not as a disparagement, but it is a real question. If you want that, that's great. And I'm not in any way disparaging that. And in fact, I'm completely convinced you can serve God as well as anybody else, and maybe more than others, depending on your zeal and your ability to serve God from that position. But if you want something different, you're going to have to do something different. And this may be the kind of difference you're looking for. this is not an easy path, but it's not a difficult one to figure out. It's pretty prescribed. 4 to 5 years of real trades experience. Spend your time with your hands on one end and the rest of your evenings doing the head work that you need and figuring out how to deal with people and figure out business skills and those kinds of things. And then a drive and an ability to take on a little bit of risk and step out on your own when you're ready to do that. It's going to require some hard work. It's going to require some long hours. It's going to require some dirt. It's going to require doing things differently. It's going to require some people looking down their nose at you because you decided to be different. But long term, in terms of flexibility, in terms of freedom, in terms of control, in terms of impact, in terms of the ability to help your community, you're looking at some outsized returns. So if that's you, think about it. And if you need some help with the head stuff, we can probably talk. Well, I hope we caught your interest with that. And if you're looking to figure out the next steps, you know, if you want to get in the trades, you should look around and see what's available in your area and what you're interested in. But if you want the skills that you need to combine the trades with all the other stuff that we're talking about, that's actually what we designed Ascend to do. So Ascend is our flagship program here at Unbound. And to give you an idea, I just spent the last week talking to a company that has multiple trades positions in their company, really skilled labor, and has a really hard time attracting people to that. And I said, well, hey, if I brought people in and taught them communication skills, task management, time management, relational skills, and leadership skills, and you house them and train them on the trade stuff, and before I can even talk to them, they're like, write that up and we will do that right now. And so there's those kinds of opportunities. So that one's likely to go live on Unbound's website pretty soon. So keep an eye out for that. It's a pretty exciting opportunity. I think there's going to be more of those down the road. And so if you are interested in those things, keep an eye out for those specific deals that we have going on. But if you're just looking to get into the trades in your area, know that you can work 40 hours a week in your trades job and still do Unbound, do Ascend. We can teach you those skills that will combine with your trade skills in the exact way we talked about in the podcast. And there's an additional bonus. You know, sometimes people don't want to do the trades because like, well, all my friends are going off to college and stuff like that. They're going off to college to live in a stinky dorm and have to eat cafeteria food. And they're going to have the college experience. Yeah, but if you stay home and work, you're going to get a job and you're going to get marketable skills. And if you do Ascend, you're going to get all the skills that everybody needs to do really big, high impact stuff later. And instead of sending you to a stinky dorm, you're going to be living in your house. You're going to deal with mom's home cooking, and that'd be great. But we are going to give you a student experience. But instead of dorms and cafeteria food, we're going to send you airplane tickets. And once every 3 months, you're going to get on a plane. You're going to fly to some new place. You're going to meet some of the coolest people on the planet. You're going to do some really hard things together. And by the time you're done with just the first year, you're going to have a national network behind your back, a set of stories that will rival all of your college friends that they won't even be able to relate to. And you're going to be making money because you've been working a trade job at the same time. And if that sounds interesting to you, go to beunbound.us and talk to us. If you want to hear about it directly, if you put 15 to 20 people in a room, one of us will come to you and actually present live on the stuff that we're talking about here. And you can find out about that at beunbound.us. Just contact us and tell us you'd like to host an event. And finally, if you want to know how that looks from a student perspective, we'll just stay on the line here for a second and you'll hear from one of our students explaining what Ascend looks like for them. Until next time, be unbound.
My name is Makai McClellan, and I am a Foundations alumni. That is quite a mouthful. So I did Ascend last year, and I am actually enrolled this year as a Challenge student, which is the year two program. And I'm here to tell you what the results are based off of my own experience and how I did Ascend and what that impacted and how that really honestly changed my life and the trajectory of where I was going. When I enrolled last year in Ascend, I had no idea. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And I mean that in the best sense. I had no sense of direction. I was very lost. I didn't have a good base on which to lay a foundation on. Hence the name Foundation Student. That was not on purpose. I really didn't though, and I was very lost, and I was struggling to find a community that I wanted to be in. I never wanted to go to college. That was never something that I desired. The campus life is definitely not for me, and I just had absolutely no clue what I was going to do. I quite literally stumbled onto Unbound, and I enrolled late in the semester. So I actually went to Apex which is our first event of the year, not knowing anything about anything. And come to find out, after that week had gone by, I loved it so much that I couldn't imagine my life without these people in it. I received so much love and a sense of direction and a sense of hope. And that really gave starter to the fire of where I needed to go. I enrolled late, like I said, and I started out the year kind of understanding what I was doing. Not really. I kind of had a lot of things going on, a lot on me all at once. But it was one of the best decisions I could have made. So if you're thinking about enrolling in Ascend, I say do it. And especially if you don't actually have a direction, or if you don't even know what next year is going to look like, it is going to give you a vision for the year. It is going to give you a goal to pursue. You're going to learn so much that you can actually apply to your life. A lot of what they teach out there nowadays is garbage. You're not going to use it in real life. And the skills that you learn with Ascend are going to be impacting your life for years to come. I learned things from last semester that I still apply to this day. The leadership classes that they teach are so impactful, and I couldn't recommend it more. I know that it could be scary. For me, it was. And I pray that the Lord would guide whatever decision you're going to make. But if you're not sure what this year is going to look like, and if you need a sense of direction, and you want something that is going to challenge you and also push you to grow closer to the Lord and give really good results, I think Ascend is an excellent option for that, and I hope that you enroll. Yeah. Bye.